Good evening, everyone, and a happy holiday season to you. This is RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael. We're glad you could be with us this evening and taking an hour out of your time during your busy holiday season and shopping season and everything going on right now. But we have a great program lined up for you, a whole host of different topics to talk about. So let's get with the introductions. First of all, Keith Groller not here tonight. We'll explain why a little later on. But joining me in studio from The Morning Call, MLB, Phillies beat writer extraordinaire, and Phantoms beat writer, Mr. Stephen Gross. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for bringing me back. Always a fun time.
Always a pleasure to have you here. And we're proud to have two of the three top writers at the Morning Call here to start off the program. I'm not going to say who's number three. That's up for you guys to decide. But joining us via the phone lines from the left coast, Mr. Nick Fierro, Eagles beat writer, who to talk some NFL football with us. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Glad to be on here. I hope you can hear me. I'm having a little bit of a bad connection here.
Yeah, I was worried. I know the Eagles practice was running late, so I was hoping Eagles practice would end for so that we could have you on the program. I know you've been out on the West Coast for the last week following the Birds. First of all, those fires out there. Have you been okay the last few days out there, making your way
through?
Yeah,
there's nothing here. I'm staying in Orange County and pretty far away from where the action is, although I will say that the game is going to be obviously at LA Memorial Coliseum. That's only about 17 miles away from where the fires are right now in Bel Air, which is actually part of Los Angeles. And if the wind shifts for any reason, there could be a problem, just in terms of the smoke coming into the city and the ash. But I don't think you have to worry about the fires themselves.
Well, that's good. Well, stay safe out there. Now that's the serious business. I know you've been out on the West Coast, though, and you may find this hard to believe, although I know you've been keeping tabs with the people in the Delaware and Lehigh Valley, but Eagles have had a phenomenal season, 10-1 going into the Seattle game, and yet after the loss, there were actually people lined up on bridges across the Delaware and Lehigh Valley area ready to jump. The season's over. Doug Peterson doesn't have a clue. Carson Wentz isn't all that good. And then I know that Tuesday you had a great article talking about it's just one game, let's calm down. And really, all things considered, when you take a step back and look at everything, the Eagles didn't play all that bad. They had a lot of things go wrong that don't normally go wrong. And really, there's no reason to panic. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, they're just take a step back for a second and breathe. They're 10-2.
Yeah.
They're 10-2. I mean, it just so happens that there's a lot of other teams now that it's kind of a weird year in the NFC where you have, you know, the Rams and you have Minnesota. They have a bunch of teams. New Orleans all have great records. When's the last time that happened? But, you know, I think everybody should just be kind of thankful that they should all be thankful if the Eagles are right in that mix.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to happen that way, right?
Yeah, I just certainly didn't think they'd be this good. I thought they'd be decent, but certainly not the 10-2 at this point. Obviously, you would think they're going to be the favorite. Nick, you were still there?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you think they're going to be the favorite. And again, this might be people panicking in the Delaware and Lehigh Valley areas, but people are saying this is a must-win. Do you really think that this Sunday's game against the Rams is a must-win for them?
I'm sorry, guys. I'm losing you. I can't hear you at all.
Oh, okay. We'll try to. Can we try one more time? Nick, can you hear me at all now? All right,
I can hear you, but then you keep fading out when you ask the question.
I have that effect on people. the Rams game on Sunday, what's your feeling on it being a must-win? All right. Maybe we'll try to contact Nick again and try to reestablish the line there. So, Steve, your thoughts. I know you've been can I say who you're a fan of?
Most people know. It's been outed on Twitter a few times.
Okay, so it is public.
Yeah, it is.
You're a Cowboy fan, though, and we talked a couple weeks ago. I think the NFL has really butchered the way they've handled the Ezekiel Elliott situation, too. But, you know, through all their troubles this year, they're still kind of in the mix. So your thoughts on the NFC East from a Cowboys perspective?
I mean, I think at this point they kind of have to win out, especially with the Eagles. I mean, you look at that, the question you were asking, Nick, there, you know, is this a must-win for the Rams? They have the Giants after the Rams, they have the Raiders, and then they finish the season with the Cowboys. So those, I mean, regardless of what the Eagles do this week against the Rams, they very well, you know, if they need to play their starters that last week against the Cowboys, they could very well win out. If they rest people, maybe not. But they pretty much have the division locked up.
Even
if the Cowboys would win out, I think the way it sets now is the Cowboys have to win out and the Eagles would have to lose out for the Cowboys to even have a chance. So, you know, the Eagles are going to make the playoffs. The only thing I think for the Eagles is, from this standpoint, if they lose to Seattle. Now, if they lose to the Rams, maybe you're wondering about the confidence level playing playoff-bound teams or teams that you're going to play in the playoffs. That's the only thing I might be concerned a little bit with. But seeing how well the Eagles have played most of the season, I wouldn't be too concerned, even if they lose again this week to the Rams. But, yeah, I think it's pretty much the Eagles have that division, and the Cowboys have a very, very outside shot at even just getting a wild card at this point.
And I'll just argue the flip side for a second, but the naysayers are saying, well, if you lose, that's two in a row. You're going in a negative direction, and then you have the Bears that you can't really take lightly, and then the Giants have nothing to play for. So they all the pressure would then be on the Eagles, though. But I would think, you know, you look at the season, that it's been such a phenomenal success this year, and so many things have gone right. The defense, especially the secondary, has been playing better than expected. Carson Wentz has developed faster than anyone had expected. I think even Howie Roseman. So there's so many good things happening on the Eagles. I'm really puzzled why Eagles fans are ready to turn on them and turn on Doug Peterson and turn on the organization so quickly after one loss to not only a good team, but Russell Wilson might just be the MVP when all's said and done.
And the Eagles, you mentioned how well Carson Wentz is playing. I mean, he's one of the top MVP candidates right up there, too. So, you know, there is a lot going well for the Eagles. Again, even if they lose this week, I don't think there's any reason to panic. You're playing some the Seahawks, like you said, with Russell Wilson, the Rams. They're some of the best teams in the league. So, and even if you don't beat them this time around, they're very well. I mean, they had some sloppy mistakes in that game against Seattle. They make, you know, one or two less mistakes, that's a completely different game. Maybe they have a shot. So if they play again come January, maybe that's a different story. So, you know, I don't think there's any panic even if they lose both of these.
Let's try to bring in Nick Fierro again one more time, Eagles beat writer from The Morning Call. Nick, where do you fall in that argument with Carson Wentz and the way he has developed so far? I know a lot of the national pundits have been comparing him. Is he to Tom Brady? Is he better than Tom Brady? And then, oh, by the way, Russell Wilson is going on having maybe a better year than both of those guys, at least right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we haven't really heard Russell Wilson's name in that MVP.
Yeah.
Candidacy until what he did last week. And now all of a sudden, if you really want to look at two, how you define MVP, most valuable player, he's everything to that team.
Mm-hmm.
He's everything to the offense anyway, for sure, and really to the team now with all the injuries that they've had on defense. The Eagles had had him on the run the whole game, and look what he did. I don't know that there's any player that's more valuable to their team. And here's a team that might be in the playoffs and winning in the playoffs as well. Of course, you know, the voting has to be done before that. But, I think Russell Wilson has to be in that conversation. I don't get caught up, and I know that the quarterbacks themselves here this week don't get caught up in comparisons.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to win the game. You know, I don't think Carson Wentz cares whether he's ranked, you know, a notch or two behind Jared Goff or vice versa. They just want to win the game.
Nick, the middle of last week, I started preparing some questions I was going to ask you. One of them was about Alshon Jeffries, and do you think he'll sign an extension? Because you had a story that he was saying all the right things, although sometimes the body language wasn't there, wasn't that he was completely on board. He hasn't been getting nearly as many reps and as many catches as he had been prior to coming to the Eagles. And then they dropped the news at the end of last week that they signed him to a contract extension. First of all, your thoughts on that move and how much of a nice step is it to have him locked up now for several years going forward?
Yeah, I thought it was a timely move, something that they probably needed to do, as long as the money was right, which I guess it was, because the Eagles wouldn't, they wouldn't enter into any kind of agreement that wasn't right for them. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he's being overpaid. I think it's a combination of what he's been doing this year, what he's been doing the last few weeks. You know, he's been developing better rapport with Carson Wentz week after week, and then combined with what he did in the past. He's got some stuff on his resume. Beyond him saying all the right things, I believe that they believe he thinks it, too. I mean, he wasn't just saying that stuff. He didn't want to have this process go to free agency where he could possibly get some more money. down the stretch here, if he has a couple of real big games and maybe goes into the playoffs and has a big game, could get a ton of money. He settled for happiness and a little less. And, I think he put his money where his mouth was in that regard, and so does the Eagles. So it was a good thing they needed to do. It's one less thing they have to worry about in the offseason. They still have some business to take care of, as I wrote today. You know, I think they need to do something with Nigel Bradham, especially because when you look at the other starting linebackers, it's kind of a fragile situation, body-wise, and as far as the contract, too. So they really need him. He's the only real durable guy that they have, and he's probably the best of the three all around.
That's what's going to be my next question, because Ike Reese on one of the local radio stations here was kind of pumping Brandon Graham, and he was the next guy. He was trying to push Howie Roseman into saying that, you know, this would be the next guy to try to lock up long term. Do you foresee any other moves or any other extensions the rest of the regular season and then hopefully the playoffs?
Well, no. And I was actually kind of surprised that they did it with Alshon this late in the season. I figured if they didn't get it done by that bye week, when they normally take care of business, they got Jernigan done that week. I felt like, you know, the stuff would happen in the offseason. So, you know, no, I don't see anything happening between now and the end of the season, but I could be wrong about that. They could always figure out something with Bradham and, maybe make some deals with other guys who don't necessarily have expiring contracts, but could rework deals to make the things more cap-friendly next year. The Eagles aren't in the best cap situation. They're not in their normal great situation with the cap. They'll manage it just fine, but they have to be a little bit more creative than usual, I think, going into 2018. So every little bit helps.
Nick, we talked a little bit, you know, when we dropped you, we talked a little bit about these two games, losing to Seattle. How important is this Rams game coming up? How important do you think this is to get a win, maybe against a playoff caliber team, just because there are, you know, a few young guys on this Eagles team without a lot of playoff experience? Do you think it's crucial for them to get a win here just to build some confidence going into the playoffs?
I think they have to show up and be sharp. You know, do they have to win the game? No, not necessarily, but I think how they play in this game will go a long way kind of projecting how they're going to be in January. If they get to January now, all right, nothing's guaranteed right at this point, but we all think they're going to win the division. I still believe they're going to win the division. So at the very least, they're going to have a home game to start the playoffs. But I think that now what the game in Seattle proved last week, and regardless of what happens this week, I think it proved that I don't know that you can, you know, pencil in the Eagles for the Super Bowl unless they have home field all the way through. And even then, you know. But these games are going to be tough. It's going to be tough to go to any one of these teams. Because Minnesota and, you know, New Orleans are in a dome. I think, actually, L.A. might be the easiest place to play, especially this coming Sunday, because – you know, think of how many Eagles fans are going to be there. It's going to be like that game against the Chargers where it was a home game, basically.
Nick Fierro, Eagles beat writer, our special guest joining us from the morning call. One of the great things about your coverage is you have letter grades after each win. What kind of grade would you give Howie Roseman? And how surprised are you at all these moves he's making? You know, if you sit back and kind of play armchair GM, you could say, all right, let's bring in wide receivers, let's bring in these guys, let's extend these guys. And it seems like he's doing a lot of things well right now.
Yeah, I would give him an A for this year, this offseason, and all the way through this year, you know, starting – you know, right at January 1st, 2017. I mean, not every move has worked out, but not every move ever works out for any team. And all the little things have really kind of paid off. Even the stuff that when you're thinking at the time, wow, you know, what is he doing? He gave up a second-round pick and Jordan Matthews to get a cornerback right before the season started. You know, okay, that's going to mess up the chemistry. Well, it didn't mess up the chemistry very much. So they plug Nelson Aguilar into Jordan Matthews' spot, and they're probably getting more production, better production from him than they got from Matthews. Not the same number of catches, but quality is there. The yards per catch are higher, and what he could do after the catch. Things have just kind of really taken off with just all the little moves that they've made to deepen this roster. You know, the running backs, getting Jay Ajayi. Yeah. They gave up a fourth round pick, but you know, if it doesn't work out, I still say it's a good gamble.
Yeah. Let's assume the Eagles make the playoffs and they're heading into the postseason in good shape. Some of the areas like the running game, the secondary, the defensive backs, the concerns before the season. How do you think they'll hold up once they get to the postseason and they get matched up with
How do you think they'll hold up with what?
When they get to the postseason, those probable matchups, who they'll face in the playoffs. How do you think the running game, the secondary, some of the weaker spots? How do you think they'll hold up in the postseason?
Oh, I think it's all just fine. I think the running game is fine. It's been good. I mean, they don't have one running back who dominates or anything, but they get it done.
Yeah.
They've been getting it done. And I don't think the secondary is a weakness anymore. I know it kind of looked that way last week, but you know, think about it. Those guys had to plaster receivers for, you know, 7, 8, 9 seconds while this quarterback was running around. There's nothing really he could really do. I mean, I don't care what kind of cornerback you are, even Deion Sanders. Eventually, you're going to have to grab on and grab onto somebody for dear life, and you're going to draw penalties.
Mm-hmm.
I think the corners have been good, safeties have been good, and the running game and the defense are things that do well in the playoffs, that travel well in the playoffs. So I think they'll be just fine. They can get there, you know, without any more injuries.
Yep. Before we let you go, I know you're busy covering the Eagles, but do you have any thoughts or have you heard much from the Eagles about the Steelers-Bengals game the other night? It was pretty vicious. Two players were carted off the field, and the talk, I think, nationally has been about the viciousness of that game and the argument where, you know, it's a brutal game. Football is a brutal sport. It's rough. And then you have the other argument that's saying football's getting a little too carried away.
Oh, absolutely. That hasn't been a conversation with any of the Eagles that I had yesterday. We haven't had the locker room open yet here today, but no, but I was paying attention to it, and the only thing I can say about, you know, Vontaze Burfict, and nobody wants to see that happen, but geez, how can you not think that that's some kind of a karma thing coming back to bite him, all those things he's been doing over the years, and, you know, then the taunting afterwards. There's a bad blood between these teams to begin with, and that just kind of spilled all over, literally, I guess, spilled all over the place. I don't know what could be done about it. I think that the league's pretty much on top of stuff like this, but I think they maybe have to be, you know, maybe they have to be a little bit more consistent with, you know, with these penalties or with these fines, suspensions. You know, look what happened with Rob Gronkowski. You know, that was a blatant cheap shot. He only got one game suspension.
Yeah.
I don't think that's sending a good message.
No.
You?
No, that was so ridiculous. I mean, that was, you know, you can argue about whether it's a late hit or after the whistle, but that was just, play had stopped and he just kind of went and flopped on a guy. I certainly think they could have suspended
him. I'm thinking that if that had been Tom Brady and somebody had flopped on him like that,
that's a
three-game suspension.
Yep. All right.
What they're saying is the career of that cornerback, I can't think of his name, the Buffalo player, but he doesn't count as much as Tom Brady.
Yeah. Of course, you'll have a great preview on the morning call coming up, but can we pick your brain for a prediction for the Rams game on Sunday?
Well, I'm leaning toward picking the Eagles. I haven't really come out with it yet. I'm still waiting to see what happens here with Zach Ertz and a few other things, and a few things with the Rams injuries, too. Ogletree might not play and whatnot. But right now, I'm going to say Eagles 30-24.
30-24. All right. Well, thanks so much. Stay safe out there on the West Coast, and we'll look forward to more coverage leading up to and including the Rams game on Sunday.
Okay.
All right. Nick Fierro joining us, Eagles beat writer from The Morning Call. We're going to talk with Steve and get his thoughts on the Phillies, the Hot Stove League, the off-season rumors that are out there, and some Phantoms and Flyers talk in just a bit. But right now it's time for the trivia to roll out that question and give you a chance to win tonight's special prize. It does deal with high school sports. This was released about a week or so ago officially on the PIAA website. And according to the PIAA, which three Lehigh Valley schools now rank among the 10 largest schools in projected football enrollment for the upcoming 2018-2019 season? There was an article in the Morning Call about this because a couple teams are shifting classifications, but when they rank all the teams in terms of projected football enrollment for the 2018-2019 teams, three Lehigh Valley teams were in the top 10 across the state. correctly name all three of them. And here's more information on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority. But if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Stephen Gross, our special in-studio guest, Phillies beat writer, Phantoms beat writer. We'll talk about hockey in just a little bit, but the Hot Stove League is heating up. There's a lot of rumors out there. Winter meetings start next week down at Disney World. We almost went here at RCN. We almost got the go-ahead to go, but there we got a little snag, so we're not going down to Florida.
This will be the first year that I'm not going in 3 years, I think. We were going, and then we weren't, and it went back and forth, yeah. But we're not going now. So
I think it has a potential for a lot of things happening. But I want to start with the Phillies, though, because a lot has happened, obviously, over the last couple months. Pete McKenna, who I really liked as a manager, was let go. And they brought in Gabe Kaplan. First of all, I want to ask you about the press conference, because normally, and I've seen a lot of these over the years, the introductory press conference, the coach is there. He's trying to sell himself and sell himself to the fans and his brand of baseball. But it was unusual in a couple different ways. And Gabe Kapler, the new general, new manager, I love his enthusiasm. But at some point, it almost was like he was trying to sell me a used car, I felt like. It was a little too over the top for me. But what was your impressions of Gabe during that introductory press conference?
It was very interesting. Press conference itself and Gabe Kapler, I think right afterwards, we talked to Matt Klentak, GM Matt Klentak, on the side. And the thing he talked about most was how he was really impressed with how Gabe commands a room. And that was definitely on show in that press conference. I think he said all the right things. He seems to be a player's manager. I know he's already met some of the players, had dinner with them. It's going to be, I keep saying when people are asking me, how do you think he's going to do? I said, I think it's either going to go really, really well or it's going to go really, really bad, and I think there's going to be no in between. Yeah. But he's not your typical manager. He's, he doesn't have that much managing experience to begin with. He managed one, I believe it was a single A, one season of minor league baseball, and his record wasn't that great that year either. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out. I know they went with him because of his analytical background and, his background in the front office with the Dodgers, but it'll be interesting to see how that translates in a major league dugout.
Yeah. And by the way, the old school baseball Phillies fans will love this. He's already improved the sound system for the players in the clubhouse. So that shows you what a dedicated manager he is, how much of a player's manager he is. He's gotten a whole new sound system so that they can listen to nicer music and better quality sound before and after the game. So I'm glad that piece is done. You're right, because we're seeing this trend across baseball that it doesn't matter if you have experience, it doesn't matter how much you've done in the background. I mean, the Yankees just the anointed Boone, who's been an announcer for the last couple of years. Is that the trend in baseball to just get a fresh perspective, or is it we're seeing so much analytics? And I think we're going a little bit too much over the top with analytics, but was Pete McKenna not so much an analytic guy as opposed to Gabe, who is probably going to buy in a whole lot more than Pete McKenna or another old-school veteran manager might have?
Yeah, I think Pete McKenna, he was open to analytics and using that information, but I don't think he necessarily lived by it and died by it. The trend right now in baseball, and I wrote this a few months back, right around the time that they hired Gabe Kapler, or they were looking for a manager, is the trend seems like in baseball that GMs are, they want the manager just to be an extension, basically, of that front office. They want somebody in there that's going to take the analytical information that they are given and just relay that to the players. Mm-hmm. The manager almost is going to become just a messenger of the front office, and I think that's what a lot of teams are going for. They want somebody that's a people person, communication has to be very well, which we saw with Ryan Sandberg a few years back. He didn't have the greatest communication with the players there, and that's why things ended the way they did there. So, but the communication with Pete McKinnon was great. He was very open with his players. But, yeah, I think they're looking for someone that will take those numbers, relay them to the players, say, this is what we're doing and why. And their in-game decisions, it's basically going to be a lot of it's going to be they got to go by what the numbers say rather than necessarily a gut feeling. Even though if you listen to that press conference, you've talked to Matt Klentak, you've talked to Gabe Kapler, they'll say they want a balance. I don't necessarily believe it. I think there is definitely a lot of people, not just the Phillies, are leaning more towards the analytics than having that balance of making your gut feeling and using the numbers.
How do you feel about bringing in managers with no experience? I mean, Philadelphia is one of the largest markets. New York is the largest market. And I heard someone bring up this argument too the other, I think it was after Boone's press conference. You know, you can know the game, you can know analytics, you can know what buttons to push, but how you manage a bullpen and how you manage how players feel, are we getting too far away from that?
I think so. If you talk to major league general managers, you talk to a lot of people in the game, people, you know, the front offices that are doing the hiring, I don't think they think that. But I think so. If, you know, if I'm a GM at this point, yeah, I want somebody that's open to it. But I think I would have kept somebody like maybe not Pete McKinnon himself, but I would have, you know, keep somebody like that on that has the I mean, he was, this is his 50th year. Coming up on his 50th year in, you know, baseball. So I think that knowledge is still very important. And there's still something that scouts can give you, that eye test. You can see somebody and you can see things that don't just show up on paper or, you know, that factor into the equation. So I'm still a believer in you need to have a really good balance.
Yeah. And now they've named a lot of the coaches. They've given some honorary positions to Mickey Morandini. I think he's an ambassador or something now, whatever that means. Larry Boa, is he going to stick with the organization? Because I know at the end of the year, he kind of expressed an interest that he wanted to stay with the Phillies, but he also wanted to stay as an on-the-field guy.
Yeah, I think he's in actually one of those ambassador positions. There's something in the front office that I think the title that they gave him, so he's still with the organization, but it won't be in the dugout like it has been recently.
All right. I wanted to pick your brain about a lot of the prospects. A good number of them have seen time with the Phillies. We'll start with the infield because I think there's a lot of different ways they can go here. Mikhail Franco, who was thought of so highly a year and a half ago. I remember on the show we had this big argument about them bringing him up or waiting till May 22nd because they wanted to have him for a year of eligibility so they could retain him longer. Now he may not even be on the roster after next week. What's kind of gone wrong with him, and how do you see the Cesar Hernandez and Freddy Galvis mixing with some of the younger players?
I think Mikhail Franco, I see them giving him one more year. You know, and a lot of these players, you keep hearing if you're a Phillies fan, oh, they're going to get one more year. We want to see one more year of what this guy can do before we go. I really do think this is one of the this is the last year where you're going to see a lot of these. Let's see what they have. Because then after that, they have a big free agent market. They'll be able, you know, a ton of money to spend, obviously. You keep hearing that too. But the rest of the infield, it's a little dicey because I think if the Phillies, they could go in to spring training and they could have the same infield that they had last year. They could have two guys at first base in Tommy Joseph and Rhys Hoskins that they're going to have to split playing time and maybe put Hoskins even out in the outfield a little bit. You could have Cesar Hernandez at second, Freddy Galvis at short, and Mikhail Franco at third, or you could go in and you could have Freddy Galvis, he could be traded next week. Cesar Hernandez is another guy that if the Phillies make a trade, I think he's somebody you watch. And even Tommy Joseph, the Phillies floated him around the trade deadline this past summer. Nobody really, you know, was buying on him. Maybe that's different this time around. But those are three guys that easily could be traded, and that's going to shift the whole thing. But there's just as good of a chance, I think, right now that one of those guys, you know, those guys are all going to spring training with the Phillies, as much as a chance as one or more is traded. But you have guys coming up at both second and short that's going to force the Phillies' hand a little bit too.
Yeah. Now, how about outfield? Nick Williams. I saw him at AAA. He looked good at times. He looked very inconsistent, I think, would sum it up. And then he goes to the major leagues and he just knocks the cover off the ball. Do you count on him as a regular corner outfielder going forward?
Definitely. I really like what I saw from him last year. He was consistent. I liked his approach at the plate. He gave you power. Yeah. Even just, I don't think a lot of people talked about this. There was some talk around the team about it, but just the speed that he gave you on the bases when he hit the ball, just coming out of the box and everything like that. He really sparked the team when he came up. I know a lot of that was lost, but if Rhys Hoskins doesn't come up and do what he does in August, I think people that really overshadowed what Nick Williams did and how valuable he was to that team. So having him there a full year, if he picks up where he left off last year, I think he's one of the better players on that team right now.
All right. Now, Odubel Herrera. This guy, I certainly can't figure out, and unfortunately, I don't think a lot of the Phillies can figure out. He's a great hitter when he wants to be. He has a lot of speed and shows athleticism, but he takes some of the worst routes to balls I've ever seen. I guess he was a second baseman. He's a converted center fielder. There was talk of moving him to a different position, then they kept him in center field. Do you think they're going to keep him? Do you think center field is his niche? Do you think they're going to build around him, or could he be traded next week?
All of the above. They could do anything with this guy. If I'm calling the shots, he's somebody that, and this hasn't been talked about a whole lot, but he's somebody that I look at trading. If somebody's there, you could get what you want back for him, or even package him up with maybe Cesar Hernandez to get a top-tier pitcher or something, throw some prospects in, get what you're looking for. I think that's a good way to do it. He has a very team-friendly contract. He's the only guy on the roster that's locked up right now with guaranteed money. There's a lot of talent there. I don't know if anybody's really figured out how to completely get all of that talent and get a great performance out of him. I mean, you can see how inconsistent he is at the plate. He'll hit almost 400 for a stretch, and then he'll hit, well under 200 for a stretch. Yeah. But he always seems to finish the year out around 300. No matter how bad the routes he takes, he has some errors. But if you look at the analytics, it says, he is a pretty good outfielder. He makes a lot of those catches, even though it doesn't look pretty all the time.
Yeah.
But the Phillies also, and I don't think a lot of people talk about this, Aaron Altherr is a true center fielder. So he's somebody that they could easily plug into center field. They have other outfielders in the system. Yeah. So if I think Odubel Herrera, if they want to trade him, he's expendable. If something comes up that they see that they like.
And I think that's a frustrating thing for a lot of Phillies fans, because going into last season, it was Franco and Herrera are your cornerstones. And those were probably the two most inconsistent players of anyone who watched the 2017 Phillies.
Yeah, I think so. And when you look at that outfield, too, there's guys like Roman Quinn, Dylan Cousins. If they come up, now you have all these guys. I think the Phillies fans just have to look at, we have Nick Williams, you have Aaron Altherr, some of those guys, and there's going to be prospects that come up and don't pan out. If Michael Franco doesn't pan out, I don't think it's a huge loss for the Phillies, even though he was one of the first guys to come up, because you have so many guys coming up, and I think that are going to be true major league players. And in that little sequence, I didn't even say Rhys Hoskins. And yeah. So, if he can do what, he showed flashes of last year, there are a lot of talented players there. They're not as far away as I think a lot of people think. They need they need starting pitching and somebody to step up at third base, whether that's inside or outside the organization. Other than that, with Scott Kingery coming up, J.P. Crawford, I think the Phillies, I think that's what's going to make this turnaround so quick when you look at how they finished last year to probably where they are at the beginning of 2019.
That's the name I really like, Scott Kingery. Tom Housenek at the morning call was raving about this kid in Reading. We saw it in the Lehigh Valley, how well he plays. There's comparisons to Chase Utley, Dustin Pedroia. I really think he is a guy that you can build on. You just got to find a spot for him. And if the Phillies haven't been talking a lot about him. I know J.P. Crawford's been going on doing a lot of the PR and the travels and the caravans and so forth this offseason. But Kingery is a guy I think they can build on. Do they feel as strongly as everyone that has seen him, Tom Housenek, myself, and people who cover the Iron Pigs? All of us really like Kingery, and he has such a high baseball IQ when you talk to him. He understands the game. He gets it. He's not full of himself. And I think he's a guy that the fans are going to latch onto. Do the Phillies feel as highly about him?
Yeah, I believe so. I think the only thing is he's not going to start the year next year in Philadelphia. He hasn't been in Philadelphia. J.P. Crawford was up there. Mm-hmm. The Philadelphia fans got to experience him. They saw him firsthand in Philadelphia. And I think that's why the Phillies are kind of pushing him a little bit. I think he's going to start in this year in the majors, whereas Scott Kingery, I think it's going to be more like when Michael Franco came up. It wasn't until middle of May. Yeah. I think that's going to kind of be the deal with Scott Kingery, regardless, even if he comes out and starts hitting 500 for the first couple of weeks at Lehigh Valley. I think he's going to be here until at least mid-May. So I think that's why the Phillies aren't really pushing him right now. They know what they have. They do really like him, but it's just going to be one of those things where it's a matter of time until he comes up, and that's why they're not talking too much about him right now.
Yep. And keep him for another year of protection, too, under contract. All right, real quick, I'll ask you about any thoughts about the pitchers, and that would be the scene that's most obvious if they're going to make a move next year or next week at the winter meetings, that they would try to add a veteran presence in the rotation and or the bullpen. Your thoughts about the pitchers and any names out there you're hearing that the Phillies could try to go after a target next week?
Tyler Chatwood was a big name I think a lot of people were talking about, and I thought made sense too, although today I guess he just signed a three-year deal with the Cubs. So Alex Cobb, Lance Lynn, those are guys that I think the Phillies, you can look at those type of names. The only thing is with those guys, you have to look. If they're going to want a 4 or 5 year deal, that's not with the Phillies just yet. I think that's going to be next offseason that they're looking to make. I think you're still not necessarily locked into 1 year deals like they had with guys like Jeremy Hellickson, but 1 to 2 year deals, I think that's what the Phillies are looking for in that starting rotation. They definitely want somebody that can eat innings and be kind of a veteran presence to go along with Aaron Nola, because he's really the only sure thing I think you have in that starting rotation right now. So I think the most focus going into the winter meetings is going to be the starting rotation. But like I said, I don't think Yu Darvish, the big free agent pitchers or pitchers that the teams are looking to trade for, you'll hear the Phillies linked with some of those guys because the Phillies have a lot of prospects. They have the money to spend. They can put those guys on the payroll. But I don't think that this winter is going to be the winner that they go and they make those big deals or make a big splash.
All right, well, hold that thought, because the CBS and other outlets are reporting this afternoon the Orioles are listing offers for Manny Machado. And that was one of those names you said about next year, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, and there's going to be a ton of free agents, maybe the best free agent class ever available next year. But there's rumors out there that the Orioles would listen and entertain offers. We don't know if it's just posturing at this point. But if you're the general manager, you're Matt Klentak, would you take a fly at Manny Machado, try to get him on board now, and then try to lock him up after that?
If I'm Matt Klentak, I think about it. I seriously consider it. But with the way the Phillies are, I would be surprised if they would. I think they want to see Michael Franco. And the thing with Michael Franco, it's frustrating because you watch him. The talent is there. He just hasn't been able to show it. He hasn't able to produce at third base. So I think they want a definite no, we can't get anything out of him. We're going to move on before they go, because to bring Manny Machado in, especially to trade at this point, only 1 year left on the contract, you'd almost have to know that you're going to be able to re-sign him to bring him in. And regardless, you'd have to give up a lot. So to still think that Michael Franco could be your third baseman, I don't think the Phillies are going to be willing to give up what they'd have to at this point to go out and get Manny Machado.
All right, a lot of good insights on the Phillies heading into the winter meetings, which start next week down in Disney. When we come back, we're going to pick Steve's brain and talk some ice hockey with the Flyers and the Phantoms talk in just a little bit. This is normally the part in the show where it's Grueler's Grumblings, where Keith gets to talk about whatever he wants to. He's not here tonight. Unfortunately, there's some bad news in his family. His mom has not been doing well lately, and she's not doing well this evening. So we want to extend our prayers to Keith, his mom, and to the entire Grohler family. We're hoping for some good news, and hopefully she can turn things around and get better here. But that's the reason Keith is not here tonight. So your prayers would be appreciated for Keith and his family. Also, later this afternoon, Joe Craig, former co-host of Sports Talk, had open heart surgery. And as you've been following the show, he's also had some family issues health-wise the last couple months. So first call I'm going to make after we get off the air here is to call Craig household and see how Joe did with his open heart surgery tonight. So we appreciate if you keep both those two fine men and their families in your prayers this evening. We'll be back with more.
this year.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Steve Gross, the Phillies beat writer, Phantoms beat writer, is joining us, sharing some humorous stories during the commercial race, which we certainly appreciate. Not for air. We can't say those stories on the air. Clean stories, just can't say them on the air. Flyers talk. Man, around this time last year, everyone was on board. They were young. They had some really exciting players coming down the pike. This year, they have been awful. And I know when the parent club does poorly, there's a trickle-down effect, too. But first of all, I don't know if you get a chance to see the Flyers too much because you're covering the Phantoms and also doing the Philly stuff. But what has gone wrong with the Flyers this year?
I think it's just they're extremely young. If you look at, I know that all the stats came out at the beginning of the year with the last time that they've been this young on defense, especially defense. They're very young on defense. So I think the problem with the Flyers is they almost don't know how to win, as silly as that sounds. Mm-hmm. But you go through this team, they started off the year real well, and then they exceeded my expectations starting off the year. I wasn't expecting much. Then they lose, they're going on that streak where they lost, 10 in a row.
Yeah.
At that point, if you actually broke down the games, watched the games, I caught maybe three or four of them myself, and I talked with some of the Flyers beat writers, and they said the same thing, where there was a handful of those games, especially in the beginning of that losing streak, where the Flyers had a chance to win, or they should have won those games. And I know you look at the win-loss column, it doesn't matter if you should have won a game. You need to win games. But I think that's what's promising going forward, and a lot of people were asking me during that losing stretch, what's this team going to be like for the rest of the year? And I said, I think when you are looking at this team again towards the end of the year, when we get into spring, I think the team's going to be a lot better at the end of the season. Won't necessarily be a playoff team, but I think they're going to be a lot better. They blew a couple two-goal leads. It was just, I think you have so many young guys that when you get into late in the game, whether they have the lead, it's a close game, they don't know how to put it away. And I think the longer they play, the more they kind of get some direction, they gain experience. I think this team will be better. And you still have a ton of talent in the farm system coming up, too. So, they're going through a rough stretch here, but I think it will definitely get better as the season goes along, and especially into the future.
How is Scott Gordon held up? Because that's the deadly combination. When you have inexperience, you have youth, you have injuries, and when you do have someone playing well, they get yanked from you to go to the parent club.
Yeah, that's the thing with the Phantoms right now. They're still, the Phantoms are doing well. They're towards the top of the standings, but it's really, and again, especially on defense, it seems like there's different guys in every night. I just wrote, actually, in a story I did last night, that the Phantoms have the second most defensemen used so far in the AHL this season. They've used 12 different defensemen. I think Rochester is the only team that has used more. They have 14. But it's the defensemen, it's completely different than what you thought you'd have going into the year. You thought you had a number of veteran, well, not necessarily veterans. You had some veterans like TJ Brennan was there, Mark Ault, Sam Moran is supposed to start there, Phil Myers is a big prospect that's going to be there, Mark Friedman, another one, and you look at all those guys, Brennan just got called up. The only one of those guys that you think are going to start the season with the Flyers, or the Phantoms, going into the year, the only one that played last night was Mark Freeman out of those guys, and it's due to injuries, call-ups, everything like that, but despite everything, Scott Gordon seems to, it's like they're not missing a beat. He's doing a really good job there with everyone at the Phantoms. And last weekend, two games, they had a total of five, what should be ECHL defensemen playing for the Phantoms between the two games, four in each game. So they have a lot of young defensemen too, and a lot of guys that don't have, that either made their AHL debut this year or only have a couple AHL games under their belt. But they're stepping right in, and you wouldn't know it going to the games.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about a couple of players they just signed, but first let's go to the phone lines. We have Tom from Hellertown wants to take a shot at our trivia question. Tom, welcome to Sports Talk.
How you doing, Chris?
Good, Tom. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. I haven't seen you in a while. I saw you a few times over at the Pigs games, but Told you I'd call in and win this prize.
Oh, yeah, fire away. I'm glad you finally called. You're one of these people that always say, I knew the answer, but I didn't call in. And then we say prove it, and then we give you the answer. But I'm glad you finally called us, Tom.
All right. I'm going to say Park Clinton.
Okay.
Emmaus and William Allen.
Wow. Very good. Steve and I were, I admitted I would not have thought Emmaus. I thought either Easton or Liberty, but you're right. Emmaus has climbed into the number 10 spot. Allen is 6th, Parkland is 5th, Easton is 11th, Liberty 13th, and then Dieruff is 22nd. So, Tom, you really did get it. You know what you're talking about.
Hey, it's from hanging around with you.
Oh, I don't know about that. In a few weeks, I'll be looking forward to baseball season because it's getting cold.
Hey, sounds good. And sorry I missed your program earlier. Maybe I'll catch it on the other side. But, good talking to you, and I'll see you in April. And also, my best to your people that are going through some health issues right now.
We appreciate that. I will pass that message on.
All right.
Thanks for giving us a call. All right, so we got a winner for that. We're going to take a break, but as we head to the break, a reminder about the Hoops Challenge featuring Keith Groller and myself. It's back for a second year, better than ever, and it starts this week. In fact, the contest ends on at 5 p.m. tomorrow. If you're watching us live, Friday, December 8th is when the first round of contest comes to an end, so get on board. Make your vote count and vote for your favorite teams for local basketball and win weekly prizes and also the grand prize. The contest page is at The Morning Call at themorningcall.com/hoops. If you're listening to us on the podcast, themorningcall.com/hoops to play the 2017-2018 edition of the Groller Michael Hoops Challenge. Make sure you vote for your favorite teams. And again, the deadline for this week is Friday, December 8th at 5 p.m., but we'll have one more contest in December, and then the contest will resume on a weekly basis in January and early February. So one more time, head to the Morning Call website, themorningcall.com/hoops, and participate. Final segment of Sports Talk is straight ahead. Final segment of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. Much thanks to Stephen Gross from The Morning Call, Eagles, Phillies beat writer, and Phantoms beat writer, Nick Fierro, Eagles beat writer, joined us during segment number one. If you're just joining us now, make sure you catch the replay. You can watch the show on The Morning Call website or hear the podcast or watch the show on demand if you want to hear Nick's insights that came during the first segment of our program. Steve, a couple other Phantoms points I wanted to ask about. Nick Lucco and Adam Comrie. Two defensemen were added. Seem like journeymen. They're signed to PTO deals. Is this kind of a stopgap move, or any kind of are either of these guys Phantoms fans can kind of watch for in the coming weeks?
Yeah, I think they're mostly guys. I mean, they were with Redding, and they were signed to ECHL deals. So the way it works is those guys have to play with the Phantoms. They have to be signed to a professional tryout contract. So those guys come up. You know, they've stepped in. They've done their part. But I think, you know, they're not necessarily guys you're going to look for. The big prospects that you want to keep an eye out, Phil Myers, as I mentioned earlier, Mark Friedman. Phil Myers is out with an injury. Him and Sam Moran, I think they're going to there's been some. Scott Gordon said last week that probably not until after Christmas. Then Ron Hextall, the Flyers GM, came out and said, I believe it was yesterday, maybe 1 to 2 weeks for those guys. So they're still going to be out for a little bit, Moran and Myers. But Myers is probably the biggest defensive prospect you want to keep your eyes on there. But, yeah, Comrie, Lucco, I think when the Phantoms either get some guys sent back down from the Flyers or just get healthier, they're going to be guys that are going to go back to Reading. So not necessarily guys that are going to be there for the rest of the year.
Now, coming up for the next week or so, Phantoms start a three-game road trip starting with Hershey. What are your thoughts on the road trip? And I know people are busy with the holidays, but when they come back to the PPL Center, right now, kind of in the middle of the standings, do you think they'll be any better off after this road trip?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're just starting to get their identity. There were some inconsistencies in the defense, and that led to, you know, they'd win one or two, they'd lose one or two. They weren't really getting a rhythm. I think from what we've seen now, the last couple of games, I think they are starting to get that rhythm. They're only going to get healthier. They're going to get some more of their more talented guys back. And some of the younger guys that have stepped in on defense, the ones that will remain, I think combining them with some of these guys that are coming back, I think the Phantoms are, you know, they're poised for another playoff push. They made the playoffs for the first time in seven. They ended a seven-season drought last year. So, you know, I think it's safe to say that the Phantoms will be in the playoffs this year. So, you know, I think you'll see better play, more consistent play as we go towards the end of the month and into the second half of the season.
And as people that follow the Iron Pigs know, when the parent club is not having success, you're having success, a lot of those players get drained. I think we saw that with the Iron Pigs, that the Phillies, you know, they started getting tired of seeing some of those regulars, so they started pulling the Reese Hoskins and Nick Williams and so forth, and then the Iron Pigs kind of struggled. They still made the playoffs, but they weren't nearly the same team. I guess Flyers could be in that same boat, or the Phantoms could be in that same boat in a couple of weeks.
I don't think it'll be as bad necessarily as it was with the Iron Pigs this year. I think because we talked about it earlier, how the Flyers are so young to begin with. I don't know if they'll necessarily be pushing for a playoff spot either. So those two factors, I think a lot of the guys with the Phantoms, you'll see stay with the Phantoms. There might be, you know, as we're seeing now with injuries and such, or suspensions in Radko Gudas's case, they needed to call some Phantoms up. But for the most part, I think you won't see as much as you have in this first 25 or so games for the Phantoms.
All right, final 10 seconds of our program, Stone Cold Lock Time. It's where we guarantee something in the world of sports will come true. Steve, what is your Stone Cold Lock?
I'm going to say the Eagles will not win two playoff games this year. That's going to be my Stone Cold Lock.
All right, and since Keith's not here, I'll make one quick. The Becca girls, Becca boys, and the Southern Lehigh girls will not lose they will lose less than 10 games combined all year long. That'll do it. Next year, next week, will be our year in review show. Join us for that. For Steve, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.